History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. This Day in History, January 18th. On this day in 1777, the city of San Jose, California is founded, later to become one of the most vibrant in the Sunshine State, with strong ties to the tech and computer industries in the 20th century. In 1896, the very first X-ray machine is demonstrated, the new device later used to identify patients' physical problems in the medical industry, introducing a new tool in the fight against disease. In 1903, the first wireless transmission is made from Massachusetts across the Atlantic Ocean. And in 1919, the Paris Peace Conference begins at Versailles, following the cessation of hostilities in World War I. The Treaty of Versailles would later be criticized by many observers as dealing inadequately and inappropriately with many issues regarding Germany, leading to World War II just 20 years later. Many people say that history is, well, just a tad boring, partly because their teacher in grade school or even high school never got them interested enough. Teachers around the nation have faced this dilemma for decades, and the best ones are able to spark an interest in their students to pursue investigations into the nation's heritage, which truly is the story of us all. At least one person has done a pretty good job. At least his experience shows that. Arch Hunter was a teacher in the Marple Newtown School District outside Philadelphia for 24 years. He's also taught more advanced history courses at the Freedom Foundation based in Valley Forge for the last 6 years. Teaching American history is a challenge to any teacher, as in today's world, they compete with iPads, cell phones, video games, and other electronic diversions which grab kids' attention. Arch has long been interested in American history, and he's with us today to discuss his many years of teaching. Arch, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell us about how you first got interested in history. Were you a history buff as a kid?
I was a history buff, interested in history through school, and actually it was the only subject that really that I had any interest in, and the only subject, honestly, that I ever did well in.
Mm-hmm. Now, what school did you go to?
I graduated from Eastern University with a master's degree.
But how about your under education, so to speak? Where did you grow up? What area are you from?
I grew up in Newtown Square, and I went to the high school and graduated from the high school that I teach at Marple Newtown.
Oh.
And then I went to college in Florida, and then I also did a seminary in Florida, and then years later made a career change to go into teaching, and that's when I went to Eastern and got another degree in education.
Oh, excellent. Now, just tell us honestly, did you have any good history teachers in grade school or high school?
I had several good history teachers when I was a junior and senior in high school.
And did they spark an interest in you, or had you already been interested in history?
I did have an interest in history, but they almost as if they put gasoline on my fire when I was a junior and senior in high school, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been interested in history for, gosh, many years, over 50 years, since I was in the fourth grade. So that would make me, what, about, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And I went to Catholic school where if you didn't learn, the nuns wrapped your knuckles with a ruler. So you had to learn, and I actually enjoyed learning. I actually enjoyed all my classes. History was one of my favorite subjects. Two of my sisters are teachers, and many friends are as well. I've actually heard that today, in the year 2016, many schools around America de-emphasize the Founding Fathers and the early Republic and focus more on recent events like the Civil Rights Movement. What's your experience in how schools teach about our heritage and what periods they focus on?
Well, let me tell you about our school, and I don't think Marple Newtown is that much unique from really a lot of other schools. When our kids are in middle school, they learned the Revolutionary time period through the Civil War time period, and then when we get them in high school, we pick them up with Reconstruction through the present.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a standard course, or they can take a full-blown American history course, more of a breadth course, either as juniors.
Now, when you say middle school, how about the early years? How about kind of grade school? What years? What, you know, grades? What, 1 through 5?
They get a smattering of, you know, the Puritan era, the colonial time period, the founding of the New World, and that time period.
Okay, so typically, if I'm understanding you correctly, typically there's kind of a flow through as you go through the grades in school, K through 12. From the early years, which is the early colonial period, all the way up through the, let's just say, the 1960s, 1980s. There's very little repetition, let's just say, of the Founding Fathers' early republic, unless students, as you mentioned, may want to take a special course. Is that right?
Yes. In their junior year at our school, they can take either an AP American History course or a course that we call American Studies. It's a broad overview of our nation's history.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, having talked to a few different teachers, I've actually heard some comments, which, you know, of course, represent a bit of a spectrum, but some teachers even, think that many of our high schools are kind of ignoring or de-emphasizing the early republic and focusing more on, let's say, the last 100 years. I mean, do you agree with that? Or, I mean, in your experience, you know, knowing other teachers, other schools, have you seen evidence for that?
I haven't seen a lot of evidence of that from other schools or other teachers that I have talked to. Our school, Marple Newtown, I teach two courses. One is the Revolution and Civil War. The other course is World War II and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very specific courses that that our school allows me to teach.
Interesting. I went to Lower Merion High School in Ardmore, and this goes back over 40 years, back to the early to mid-70s. I graduated in 1974. At the time, it was considered one of the best high schools in the country. I'm not sure where it ranks today, but I have to be honest with you. At the high school level, I can't remember much about the history courses I took. I can remember more of what I learned in grade school, believe it or not. And that, again, maybe the Catholic education had something to do with it. But I think there was a bit more of an emphasis back then on the early republic, founding fathers, early presidents, et cetera. And this is not meant to be any kind of a criticism. It's just kind of a comparison of where schools and where trends have gone. As a teacher, what would you call your mission as a teacher? What do you try to instill in your students?
Oftentimes, Gene, students don't like history because they find it's not relevant to them, it's not important to them, because it's taught to them as facts and dates and memorization, and you just spit it back onto a test and then you forget it. What I try to instill in my students every day, that the study of history is not facts and dates. The study of history is a study of human behavior. How do humans behave in certain time periods, and why they behave the way they do?
Exactly, and the behavior is something that we have the time perspective to evaluate. And as you well know, teaching history, our view of past events, past presidents, past catastrophes, past wars, changes over time.
It does.
And I just completed my master's degree in American history, and up until just a couple of years ago, I'd never heard of the term historiography, which is how historians have written about history.
Correct.
And it changes over time. Most people think, well, history is always the same. Absolutely not.
History
does change as we view it differently, which is kind of interesting if you think about it. And as a history teacher, what is your perspective on historiography? In other words, what do you view as the process that is involved in effect changing our interpretation of history?
Well, it's because we need to constantly and continue to read and study as new information comes to light, as the processes of our political system is working throughout the world and throughout our history, and to see when decisions have been made or situations that we have come through, how that is continuing to affect the present as well as the future. So when people say to me, well, you know, President Nixon is the same every year, they don't really understand history.
Exactly. I would agree with that completely, and I want to make an example here. I'm a student of the presidents and the presidency, and when Ike, President Eisenhower, yeah, left office in 1961, January 61, and handed the reins over to Kennedy, he was not viewed particularly well by historians at the time. He was kind of viewed as a bumbler, not a particularly effective president, did a lot of golfing, etc. In fact, for the early years following his presidency, he died, I believe, in 1969, he was ranked in the bottom third of all presidents. Today, he's ranked, I believe, in the top 10. And that is a change in the way we view history and way we view events and presidents and their accomplishments. I think he's a great example of how our perspectives change over time.
And one of the I tell my students when I teach General Eisenhower, go home and ask your parents or go home and ask your grandparents, what do you think of the general's presidency? And I said, most of them will say to you, well, he really didn't do much. The country was in neutral, and he golfed a lot. And that, as you just said, that was her perspective. Now, all these years later, because we have documentation and we're able to look exactly what happened during his presidency, there were 14 Cold War conflicts during his presidency. Mm-hmm. He appointed 5 justices to the Supreme Court. It was the Adams for Peace. It just goes on and on and on. When we look now back on his presidency, that is why now the general is ranked in the top 10.
Yes, and a couple of things that a lot of people are not that familiar with is Eisenhower essentially started, in a big way, the national highway system.
Correct.
Interstate highway system, as we know it. He was also one of the first presidents really actively involved in civil rights with the events in Arkansas, mm-hmm, back in the 50s. Brown versus Board of Education happened under his watch.
It did.
And quite frankly, he ended the Korean War as best as he could, where Truman wasn't able to. So,
correct,
you know, he,
yep,
kind of came in and said, well, we're gonna end this successfully, you know, even though it's only a truce rather than a true victory. Nonetheless, he did successfully end the war. So I think he's viewed pretty well. You know, we're going to take a brief commercial break, and then we'll be right back with Arch Hunter, who's a longtime history teacher in the Marple Newtown School District outside of Philadelphia. Stay with us for Living History. Again, we're speaking with Arch Hunter, who teaches history at Marple Newtown High School outside Philadelphia, taught for many, many years, also teaches at the Freedom Foundation outside Philadelphia near Valley Forge. Arch, what is your personal favorite period in American history and why?
My favorite period is the American Revolution. And the reason is it's just such a fascinating story of times and events and people and what our revolution did, as it was the first successful revolution to bring about a change of the government that it fought for, and what our revolution then began to create all over the world.
Yeah, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. I just completed my master's degree thesis on Alexander Hamilton as the architect of the American financial system, and I have a very strong interest in the early republic. There are thousands and thousons of books written on the early republic, but I believe Hamilton is one of the underappreciated, probably the least understood of the founding fathers, and quite frankly, in my view, one of the most important. And what do you think of Alexander Hamilton personally?
Well, again, what he did during the Revolution, how close he worked with General Washington during the Revolution, and then helping to create the monetary system that we have in place today, and really set our economic stability in place for us.
Absolutely, he was one of the exceptional people back at the time. He grew up on the island of Nevis. He was actually an orphan,
yes,
in the West Indies, and He worked in a trading house where he got some of his earliest and really best financial and business skills, and he was one of the few founding fathers who was not born in the 13 colonies. Robert Morris was actually born in England. Some people consider him a founding father. I guess he's kind of in intermediate, but aside from Robert Morris, I believe he's the only prominent founding father not born in America. And he had a huge influence on the Revolution. He not only did he fight at the battles of Trenton and Princeton, but he also was Washington's aide-de-camp for 4 long years during the most treacherous periods of the war, and then went on to become our first Treasury Secretary. So a lasting imprint on America. In other words, I mentioned presidents. Who's your favorite president and why? Tell us a little bit about that, and maybe even name your top 3 or 5.
Well, my favorite president is Abraham Lincoln.
That's a good choice.
And the reason is leadership. The absolute leadership that this man gave to the nation through our most critical time of the Civil War, and what he did to help stabilize the country as best as he could through this treacherous time. In my opinion, I believe he was our smartest president we ever had. And another reason that I love Lincoln is because of his attitude. Lincoln did not look at the southern states as a separate nation. Mm-hmm. He looked at them as states in rebellion that were going to be brought back into the Union as quick as possible.
Exactly. I think it's very interesting you mentioned he was our smartest president. I want to mention something that he did. He wrote the Emancipation Proclamation in 1862, and it became effective January 1st, 1863. And a lot of people today still think that that freed all the slaves everywhere. It did not.
It did not.
It only
right.
freed the slaves in the territories which are under domination by the Confederacy or in open conflict against the U.S. government. Now, here is where his intelligence comes through. He viewed slaves as a tool of the Confederacy. They were being used by the Confederacy to help them store supplies and their munitions and their logistics, etc., and their farms and everything, which in effect were helping the Confederacy to rebel and try to destroy the Union. So Lincoln, the country lawyer, used an ingenious device to get them to come to our side, and that was, If they were actually tools of the enemy, he had a right to take those tools away from the enemy.
Right.
And that was probably his most brilliant move in the war. And a lot of people don't give him credit for that amount of brilliance, but I do. And I had a couple of classes on the Civil War and the antebellum period, and I view Lincoln as one of the top presidents. Ranking is an interesting thing, and of course it changes from decade to decade.
Sure. Yeah.
For many years, many years, probably many decades actually, Washington was ranked by just about every historian as the number one president. However, in recent years, I've seen some rankings where he's now ranked 2, 3, or even lower. I'm wondering why that is. What do you think that might be?
Well, for most people, history is in the present, and they have a tendency not to look at what has happened, why it's happened, and the foundation that particular president has given us. So it's easier to look at things in the present and just categorize more modern presidents as more important as the ones that have lived, that served the nation through our past.
I think that's true, and a good example of what you just said is when you ask people who their favorite and best presidents are in their view, many people will rank John F. Kennedy
yes.
as the best or their favorite. And I have to tell you that in my experience talking with people, seeing people interviewed about presidents and our history, I don't think they truly understand his accomplishments and the comparison of him and his administration versus all the other presidents.
Correct.
He was
yes.
certainly a very photogenic, very flashy, very charismatic president. He had a few great accomplishments. He had a few pretty big failures, too.
Yes.
And I think Kennedy is an exact statement about what you're talking about. More recent presidents tend to get more attention.
Yes.
And Kennedy is one of them. Tell us who your top three or five are. Who are some of your other favorites?
Well, my number two is another easy one for me. My second favorite president is General Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
And my third favorite president would be Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And all three for the same reason, leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Giving the nation stability and giving the nation strong visual leadership through tremendous times of difficulty.
I think that's true, and related to FDR, and again, some people today don't know this, certainly a lot of the younger people do not know this, for years, FDR, after he became president, was a photograph from the waist up.
Correct, correct.
A lot of people in America didn't know that he had very severe paralysis of his legs and could barely walk.
Correct, yeah.
Finally, I believe in the last few years, he did allow a few photographs, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. From 1937 on, he really couldn't hide it because he was practically full-time in a wheelchair from 1937 on.
And you rarely saw him in any kind of a standing position,
right.
Almost always in a sitting position. So a lot of people didn't, even at the time, they had no idea that he was actually paralyzed or could barely use his legs, let's
right.
put it that way. Certainly a very notable president. Talking about the presidents and their accomplishments. With FDR, what do you think was his most notable accomplishment?
Well, the controversy is from the left and the right, the New Deal. You know, how much did it do? How much did it really help? Did it slow down? But I take it from the perspective of what did he try to accomplish by trying to pull us out of the Great Depression? What did President Roosevelt do was trying to give the country stability and the idea of there's nothing to fear but fear itself.
Mm-hmm.
So he continued to give to pull America with leadership through the greatest economic situation we've ever had, and then on the onslaught of that, leading us through most of World War II.
Exactly, he gave hope to tens of millions of people who had none.
Correct.
And the New Deal is a mixed bag, as you well know.
It
and
is.
A lot of critics said he overstepped his bounds. But I do give him an A for effort on the New Deal. And some of those programs that he put through were actually enormously successful.
They were.
Projects completed in the 1930s, the Works Projects, Progress Administration, AAA, and others, they were actually quite successful. Not only did they put millions and millions of people back to work and give them a job and give them a little bit of dignity, but they accomplished some pretty major projects around the nation. And you can see bridges and roads and viaducts and dams and all kinds of structures around the nation still exist today and, quite frankly, are in pretty good working order, but for the most part, that were started or completed in the in the FDR administration.
The TVA was probably one of the most successful programs that he had during the New Deal.
Yes, and I do believe that his efforts to hold the country together, to give them hope,
yes.
to inspire them past their trying circumstances was actually essential. And quite frankly, even a President Ronald Reagan, who originally was a Democrat and later a big-time Republican, used FDR as a model. The Fireside Chat.
Fireside Chat, yes.
Did inspire pretty much every succeeding president to sit down once a week and talk to the American people. So you have to give them credit for that, an enormously effective tool.
And Ronald Reagan took a line from Franklin Roosevelt with, "We have a rendezvous with destiny."
Oh, exactly.
And that's,
exactly.
That's from Franklin Roosevelt, yes.
Yeah. Let's jump to an analysis of events. What events in the last century in America do you consider the absolutely most significant, and why?
Well, not probably. One of them, obviously, is World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finally got into World War II, what we eventually did to overcome tyranny, and then with that, because of World War II, I think one of the major events that we we have a tendency to overlook is the Marshall Plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, General Marshall, who then was Secretary of State, with the Marshall Plan made the statement with it that we did not fight this world war to once again shrink away from the world. For if we truly believe that democracy is superior, we must influence the world towards that end.
Exactly.
So with the ending of World War II, which was a huge event, and successfully a huge event, when we instilled the Marshall Plan in, and we helped rebuild Germany, and we helped rebuild Japan, and they became democracies. I mean, look at now two of our strongest allies, because of that.
I agree that George Marshall, a very, very significant statesman, one of the greatest of the last century. One last question, and we got to make this really quick. We're just about to finish up. Do you think electronic devices will eventually replace books?
No.
I'm glad to hear that because
I
love books.
Sorry,
I
didn't mean to interrupt you, G.
Yeah.
No, because I've been hearing that for 15 years. Human beings are relational, and electronic devices will never, ever replace an historian.
I am so glad to hear that because I absolutely love books, and quite frankly, I'm not addicted to electronic devices in any way. But I'm glad to hear the perspective of a full-time teacher to say that. Arch, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, January 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with Kim Burdick, director of the historic Hale Burns House in Newark. She's written a book called Revolutionary Delaware, which talks about Delaware in the Revolutionary War. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.